Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for iOS Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Jason Snell is here, and he has not one, but two brand new iPads. Plus, we'll talk about the anatomy of an App Store scam. And I've got a new bullet journal, and I want to tell you all about it. All that and a whole lot more coming up on iOS Today. This episode of iOS Today is brought to you by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter promo code iOS Today to save 20% off any order. And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/iOS today. And by 23andMe, an online genetic analysis company that helps you understand your 23 pairs of chromosomes, your DNA. Get over 75 genetic reports today and start exploring your DNA at 23andme.com/twit. Welcome to iOS Today. This is the show where we talk about all things everything. iPads, iPhones, iWatches, which are actually called Apple Watches, Apple TV. I am Megan Maroney. Leo Laporte is back from vacation, but is taking a little bit of a rest, had like 10 or 12, 15 flights back. So Jason Snell is here. You got one last encore with Jason Snell.
Pro tip, never go back to work the day after you return from a long vacation. No. Give yourself a day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Rest, do laundry.
Yeah. You should give yourself a day, too. You've done, 75
it's been
podcasts?
Fun just filling in with Leo in addition to the normal 80 podcasts a week that I do. So, yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. But it's good to be here. It's always good to be back with you on iOS weekly. This is great.
And if you've never met Jason, he's the former editor-in-chief of Macworld, now at sixcolors.com, does many podcasts on Relay FM, Incomparable, covers iStuff, covers TV, all the things.
All the things. There's so many things. It's time for me to take a summer vacation.
And so the news this week is there's new iPad hardware. Leo has the 10.5 iPad. I gave it a little hands-on on the new screensavers, and I had to give it back. But thank goodness.
Thank you. Just hold that one. Think about it.
It's very light. 1.1 pounds. Is that how big it is?
Yeah, it's basically
it's
a pound.
Nice. And,
you know, out of context from your 9.7-inch iPad, it doesn't feel like it's that much bigger. It is a little bit bigger, but it's not a lot bigger given that the screen is quite a bit bigger.
No, and it's supposed to be like a full-size keyboard, but so it's bigger than this. You can't use this old keyboard.
Yeah, so it's a little bit wider. It's, 0.4 inch, I think, wider. Mm-hmm. And according to Apple, there is actually, believe it or not, a spec for what a full-size keyboard is. And it has a little bit of a range, but what Apple has been able to do in the new smart keyboard on the 10.5 is make it just the QWERTY keys just wide enough that it counts as a full-size keyboard. They are noticeably wider than they are on the 9.7. Mm-hmm. All the other keys, of course, are like narrow and weird because they want those letter keys to be proper. But when you're typing, that's what you want. So it is. It's just a little bit bigger, but it is a little goes a long way when it comes to the size of the keys on the smart keyboard.
And you hosted the Tech Guy yesterday, and you were doing a little explanation, and you made a point to define the word bezels, which I thought was smart, because not everybody knows what a bezel is.
A bezel is, how you pronounce a bezel, is it a bezel, is it a bezel, nobody even knows.
But yeah.
There are these borders that we have around our devices that are they're trying to go away now, but they're still there, right? So if you look at it and you see you've got a white screen with a black ring around it, that's the bezel.
Yeah, that's the bezel. And I think it makes a difference. Apparently my thumbprint is not your thumbprint, which is good, because that'd be weird if it was.
If you just press cancel, you'll get, to, I think, won't you get my little,
you
can see the bezel a little more clearly there. But yeah, there's a border around your screen that is just the part where you kind of put your fingers, and that's where you hold it. And that various companies are trying smartphones, tablets. Everybody's trying to get those things out of the product because then the more you maximize the screen, I mean, the screen's got to be the size it's going to be. People love the screen, but the rest of it you can get rid of, and that saves on size. And that's why this 10.5 iPad is not that much bigger than the 9.7 is, because a lot of the size increase on the screen is offset by the size reduction on the bezels.
And I notice I'm leaving a ton of fingerprints on this too.
It happens.
Do you like the white? You like the black screen better than the white screen?
I like the black screen better than the white screen for a couple reasons. One is that when it's off like that, you know, it's a good match. And the other mm-hmm. thing is when it's on, especially if you've got the True Tone display that these have. Mm-hmm. If the white point on the display is sort of yellowy, you know, they don't make a True Tone like material for the bezel.
Uh-huh, right.
And so that white is always that shade. It can be reflective in different light, but I always found it like a little bit weird when the white on the bezel didn't match the white on the display. So I always kind of go for the black one, but they make both. It's like chocolate and vanilla. They make both flavors. You can have the one that you like.
Mm-hmm, you can.
I'm a space gray iPad kind of person myself.
You can't get the pink and rose gold, as we call it. They don't sell the rose gold in the 12.9, though.
No.
Why?
Apple has a really weird attitude about the 12.9. The first one that came out a year and a half ago, the accessories that they made for it, they made a smart cover for it that you could get in white or gray. You mm-hmm. get the smart keyboard, which comes in gray. Mm-hmm. And they made a back shell for it that came in white or gray. Now, the 9.7, you had all sorts of colors you could choose from. You could get a smart cover with like red, all these nice colors. And on the 12.9, nothing. So that's broken down a little bit. We actually have a few accessories now that come in. There's a brown leather case. There's the midnight blue case. So there's a little bit more color. But it's weird because it's obviously extended to the color selection of the device that you end up with. No rose gold. Like, that's a bridge too far for the 12.9.
Yeah, I don't get it. And the other thing that I learned yesterday from watching the Tech Guy is that they're not making the 9.7.
9.7 is you are using your beloved 9.7 iPad Pro. It's a discontinued model. The 10.5 is basically the next generation 9.7.
Yeah.
And that's because I think they want to differentiate it from the iPad, the mm-hmm. fifth generation iPad
right.
that they released. That's the 349 iPad. That is the 9.7 now. And then for an iPad Pro, you get a little bit bigger display. So that's the argument there.
Yeah, if I did not have this, I would definitely get this. I'm not sad. I'm not wishing for the 9.7 anymore. Because, I mean, there's no reason to have this smaller
keyboard.
They're
pretty close, right? It would be kind of confusing if they were both available at the same time, because they're so close together. I think it's a little confusing that the iPad is still there at 9.7, but at least that is a thicker, heavier, slower, and much cheaper iPad than the Pro.
How much is just the regular iPad?
Isn't it $349? It might be $329. I don't know. They cut the price on it, so it's a lot less than it used to be for sure. It's terrible. I'm terrible with prices.
Sorry, I am too. Let's go with either $329 or $349, or maybe Josh.
It's such a good deal.
$329.
Look at that. Such a bargain at $329.
So who would you recommend just the iPad to? Just the regular iPad. Who needs that?
I think anybody who is not really wanting to be on the cutting edge of the iPad, is not doing a lot of multitasking, is not planning on using it for a lot of work, but is thinking of it as that lean back device. They want to do their email, you know, they want to check Twitter or check into a Slack group or things like that, watch a movie. That's what that device is for. It's basically an iPad Air, so it's sort of 3-year-old technology. So it's not going to be cutting edge, but for a lot of people, they don't want that. They really do want to give it to their kid for watching videos, or they want to do light email on it. And I think that's the smart thing about Apple separating these two product lines like they are, is the prices are very different and the power of the devices is very different. If you want to do split screen multitasking and drop in a picture in picture, and you know, you've got a keyboard that you're attaching and all of that, if you want to do all that, you want an iPad Pro.
Mm-hmm. So let's say you bought the first iteration of the iPad Pro, the 12.9-inch, the original one, which was, I guess, 2 years old?
The 12.9 came out in December of 15, November of 15, okay. Maybe it was October. It was late 15, and then in the spring of 16, so just a little more than a year ago, the 9.7 came out.
So who would you recommend the right person to upgrade who got that and then would, is there any reason to get this one from that? Like, is there an upgrade in so much, you know, there's the new True Tone.
Yeah.
There's the Pro Motion.
So the 12.9 has gotten an awful lot of updates. I actually wrote a piece at Six Colors about this because nobody else had written it yet and I wanted to read it, which is what exactly is going on with the 12.9. So it's the idea that there are a lot of things that are different because it lagged behind a little bit on the 12.9 from the 9.7. So there's a huge gain there. Both of these models have the iPhone 7 cameras now. So they're way better cameras. The 12.9 model before didn't have a flash. It didn't have the True Tone display. It didn't have the wide color gamut. It didn't have the brighter screen. It didn't have the anti-reflective coating that's the latest and greatest there. There's so many things that are better now. And then they all get the processor. Oh, it didn't have the Apple SIM, so you could switch. I think it may have shipped with like a physical Apple SIM in it, but this has got the internal, fully virtual Apple SIM if you've got the cellular model. So you can go to a country and just bring up a screen and say, I want to buy cellular service, and it auto-programs itself to be the SIM card. So there's a whole bunch of stuff like that. They both had the faster processor, the A10X Fusion, which is a lot faster. I did some tests on the 12.9 and found that the new model is 33% faster as a single core, 89% faster in dual core. It's pretty amazing. Not that most of the apps that you use stress out the iPad's processor, but if you are doing heavy duty work on these things, they are fast. They are faster than a lot of laptops are at this point.
So a lot of those games that they always show off at the Apple demos that no one really plays.
Right. The graphics stuff is pretty impressive. And so that's going to drive those games if they ship and if anybody plays them. And then a bunch of apps that I think there are more pro level apps coming to the iPad now. I feel like this there's been a little bit of a lag, but the conception that the iPad as a piece of hardware and that iOS as a piece of software can't support professional level apps. It's just the hardware and software is really there now for it. And we're starting to see even more apps that stress that processor on these models.
Mm-hmm. And how does the Pencil, I know the Pencil is supposed to get some improvements with the new iPads. It's supposed to like know what you're about to draw, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think they do some prediction now, but with the new ones, the prediction is there's more of it. They're trying to reduce lag. The ultimate goal with the Pencil or any stylus is to reduce lag because ultimately this is about illusion. You want the illusion that you're putting graphite or ink down on a piece of paper, even though you're not. You're touching a piece of plastic to a piece of glass. So how do you do that? And one of the reasons is you want to get the tip of the pencil to the paper to be immediate. Like when you move the pencil, what you draw is right there. And when it fails is when you move the pencil and you can see the line tracing behind what you're drawing. Mm-hmm. The whole illusion is broken. So with these new models, they're not only are they still scanning at 240 times a second to see where your pencil is, but they've got the ProMotion display, so it's at 120 times a second they're able to draw. So first off, right there, you're cutting a lot of the lag out because you're drawing faster. And then Apple does this predictive thing where they look at the vector and speed of where you're drawing and make a guess about where you're going to be drawing and update to sort of anticipate that, which is you put that all together and you can get down to a very small amount of lag, which is that's the goal. They've got more room there to go, but they're getting closer to that feeling of really drawing on paper.
And do you take a lot of notes with the Apple Pencil? I know, or you're not an artist.
I'm not a big pencil person in general. It's an incredible thing. I think one of the cool things that Apple's doing and talking about with iOS 11 is this idea that they want the pencil to be a markup and note-taking tool and not just drawing. Drawing is incredibly important to them, and other graphics apps are incredibly important. But this idea that you can just have notes open on the lock screen, basically, and when you touch with the pencil, the note will flash back open and you can continue to take notes. The fact that you take a screenshot, you can instantly mark it up in iOS 11, crop it out, draw some circles, and then share it with somebody. Those are things that are much more likely to get me thinking about using the pencil more than drawing, because I can't draw anything but stick figures.
Yeah. And now I know you're using the beta of iOS 11. And you're supposed to be able to search your notes.
Yeah, that's not a feature that's new, right? I mean, Microsoft, I've been able to do that in OneNote for a long time, where if I have handwritten notes in OneNote, it's OCRing them and making them searchable and making guesses about what I'm trying to write with my terrible handwriting, which no, not even the finest artificial intelligences are capable of doing because my handwriting is terrible. But but now Apple's building that in. And the fact is, we can say, yeah, other stuff has done that, but it's a big deal that it's built into the system because a lot of people don't download those third-party apps that do this. And now, yeah, if you're in Notes and you're writing down words and then later you're like, where did I put that? And you search for the word you wrote down, hand wrote down, it'll find it. That's great. That's how it should be.
Yeah, I love that because I do feel like we should be writing more by hand. And whether that's an Apple Pencil and an iPad or a Surface and a Surface Pen, because I just think that's how you remember things. You take notes. Do you agree?
It's one of those things that I know they've done tests, they've done scientific studies that say that you will remember better when you write something down with a pencil than when you type it. Even if you're just typing notes and not trying to type verbatim, you're typing notes on a laptop versus notes on a piece of paper. It's different. You don't remember. It requires your brain to kind of process that information, and that means you understand it better and you store it better. So I think that that's what Apple's kind of trying to push people down in terms of education uses for the Apple Pencil is to start thinking of it as a general purpose note taker as well. I'm a little surprised that you can't do more with the pencil in iOS 11. Like, I really thought that they might get us straight to the idea that if you've got the pencil out and you want to write an email, that you should be able to just start writing the words and have them be transformed. That technology has existed since the Newton. It's gotten a lot better over the intervening years. And yet Apple doesn't ship as a first-party keyboard that lets you do pencil input. You have to rely on third parties for that. And that's a little bit silly.
Why do you think they don't do that?
Part of me wonders if they're just they don't think it's a... I mean, I don't think they're embarrassed by the Newton after all this time, and yet part of me thinks it's like we don't even want to step in the trap of the Newton and people getting their handwriting misrecognized. But I think they should do it. I think it's a really missed opportunity for them to not just have a keyboard or even to sense, like if you've got the pencil and you're at a text entry point and you start writing, that it just immediately leap you into handwriting to text. And if I've got my pencil out, I don't want to put my pencil down and then bring up the keyboard and then type a response if I can just write the response on my screen. So let us do that.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some really good handwriting to text apps.
Yeah, there's some good ones. There's some bad ones. There are some App Store apps that give you a keyboard with handwriting, but they seem to, the last time I checked, they all originated from before the pencil came out, and they were kind of sketchy, no pun intended. Yeah. So I hope they get better, but bottom line, that should be in the system. The OS should know, this is a time when you might want to answer this email, and you've got the pencil. I'm just going to let you write the answer right here and translate it into text. And for whatever reason, iOS is not up to that right now.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've tried some of them, and like I said, I think they're good, but then I don't use them regularly. Like, I like using the iPad and the iPhone, but then I have my journal that I like to write in by hand, and that's separate, and never the two shall meet.
Yeah, well, that's... I think that for some people, they'll be happy to let those two meet if it's a comfortable switch between them, right? But right now it's jarring. And that's, I think, with the lock screen stuff where Apple's trying to make it so that there's always, essentially, you've always got a blank sheet of paper on your iPad. If you bring the pencil up, if you turn on that feature in iOS 11, you bring the pencil up when it's locked and suddenly you've got a sheet of paper and you can write on it. If they can do that, that will open it up to a lot more people. But it's not for everybody, and I understand that.
Mm-hmm. So you have the new 12.9 and the new 10.3.
10.5. Don't undersell it. It's big.
10.5. And that's diagonally.
It's diagonal, yes, because we measure everything like we measured TVs in the 50s.
Exactly.
It's all diagonal.
And have you been typing on it using a full-size keyboard? Do you have a keyboard for it yet?
Yeah, I've got many keyboards for many of them. The full-sized Magic Keyboard for, or not Magic Keyboard, Smart Keyboard for the 10.5, it's a little bit bigger, so that's good. You can, of course, use anything with it. There is only one third-party smart connector case that's been announced, I think, so far, which is a Logitech one. It's not getting great reviews. It's not the Create. They decided to make it the Slim. I forget what the name of it is, but it's a different approach, and Serenity Caldwell wrote a review of it at iMore and was not particularly... I've heard bad things from other people, but she was definitely not particularly charitable to it. It's too bad because the Create keyboard and case for the 9.7 iPad is really good, and I'm disappointed that Logitech hasn't made a Create for the 10.5. Maybe they'll get there, but you can always attach, you know, a Bluetooth keyboard will work with any iOS device, even your iPhone. So I've got a lot of those laying around, and if you've got a stand and a Bluetooth keyboard, then you've got a keyboard that'll work with a new iPad. And the 12.9 is exactly the same dimensions as the old model. So if you've got accessories for the 12.9 and you're thinking of buying a new one, all your accessories will work. The worst thing that'll happen is if you've got a back shell for the 12.9, it'll cover up the flash. So if you want to take a picture with the world's largest cell phone camera, your 12.9-inch iPad, or if you want to use it as a flashlight to get around, you're going to need to take that back shell off. But otherwise, all your accessories, including the smart keyboard, just fit just fine.
And have you taken a lot of pictures with them?
No. No, I'm not. I have taken iPad pictures occasionally, but it's very much like, I don't know, I'm not one of those people who's on their vacation standing out in the middle of the square at the Vatican taking pictures of the Pope with my giant iPad. But occasionally, like, I'm on the couch and the cat or the dog does something funny, and mm-hmm. and I'm just sitting there with my iPad and the animal is right there where, like, I got to take a picture of this, that, you know, the iPad is there, and the iPad having a better camera makes those pictures better. I do a lot of FaceTime on my iPad. When I call my mom, I use FaceTime, and I just called her yesterday, and I noticed that, oh, that FaceTime camera is way better than the old model. So that's kind of nice.
That is nice. Yeah. I find it's good to take pictures of the dog, because my dog does not like the phone. Like, he knows the phone means he's not getting petted or fed or anything. He just has to pose.
But the iPad is like secret.
Yeah.
Secret picture taking.
Mm-hmm. 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 Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, we'll see. Speaking of calling your mom, happy Father's Day.
Thanks. Missed it by a day, but all right. I did call my mom on Father's Day.
That's nice.
It's
yeah.
true.
Yeah, I
got
know
it.
We didn't miss
I
it
see
by
what
a
you're
day,
going
but yes. Okay, so battery life. That's another question I had about, have you been pushing it to its limits at all? Or
so the funny thing about Apple and the iPad is that they've got this thing that is, they solve for 10 hours of battery life, and they make sure they've got 10 hours of battery life. The way these processors work is they're not actually three cores, they're six cores, but they only use they either use the high efficiency cores or they use the high speed cores. So basically, when they don't need to process a lot of data, they crank it down, they use the slower cores, and they save on power. So Apple's quoting 10 hours of battery life for both of these models, just like they did for basically every iPad that has ever existed. They always quote 10 hours. And, you know, I haven't seen anything to dissuade me that they're not exactly what they've been saying all along. I suppose if I was using an incredibly processor intensive app all the time for 7 hours or something, I might run the battery out. But in practice, I've never had battery life problems with an iPad that wasn't just, you know, it's in that same range, that mm-hmm. 10 hour range.
Do you ever disconnect them from the keyboards, like the smart keyboards, to extend their battery life?
No, I don't. I only put on the smart keyboards when I want to use them. Mm-hmm. Although my understanding is when you're not actually actively using the smart keyboard, even if it's attached as a cover, it's not drawing power. It only really wants to draw power when you start typing on it. And it's not, I can't imagine it's much of a power draw that it would make much of a difference. But I generally only add the keyboards when I'm typing. I know some people always carry their keyboard with them. It's like a turtle. You know, you bring your shell with you wherever you go. For me, the keyboard's always like an add-on. My default iPad mode is smart cover and just using the iPad. And then if I want to write something, I'll pull out a keyboard. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's a Bluetooth keyboard, and that's fine too.
And what about anything else we need to know about this and the new iPads?
I don't know. They're really nice. If you haven't bought an iPad Pro before, and you're using an older iPad, I think you'll be kind of amazed at how good they are. I guess we should plug the screens a little bit more, just because the ProMotion is what Apple's calling it, but it's this 120 hertz refresh rate on the screen. And there's been a lot of debate, like, is this like the new Retina, that once you see it, you can't go back to your non-Retina display? Is the 120 hertz like that? I don't know. I mean, Retina was a big leap. I don't know if this is quite as big a leap, but I will tell you, it makes your whole device feel smoother and faster, because the animations just move more smoothly than they used to. When you press the home button, that animation is animated at 120 frames per second instead of 60. It's way smoother. When you scroll a document, it's way smoother. There's no way for us to demo it on the internet. You really have to see it in person in order to understand it. But it's super smooth. It just gives the entire device the feeling of smoothness and fastness, even though it's not actually faster. It literally takes the same amount of time to go from point A to point B, but you see more of the smooth steps between the two, and it makes it feel better and faster. And it's really nice, and it's nice to read and be able to swipe up in Safari and see the screen update more. And because it's a multiple of 24, it also means that when they're playing a video from a movie, because films are shot at 24 frames a second, it actually will crank the display down to match the frame rate, so that movies will play smoothly because they'll play at 24 frames per second, which is their native rate, as opposed to if you're at 30 or 60 frames per second, they actually have to add extra frames in order to make the timing work, and that causes things to get a little bit jumpy, and some people notice that. Your TVs are really good at fixing that if you get the right settings on your HDTV, but these iPads are the best that Apple has done in that regard.
And it knows the difference when you're watching a movie or...
Yeah, it can tell. It's really aggressive, actually, about knowing what frame rate is required for what's on screen, because the thing is, it's not doing 120 updates per second when you're sitting still. When you're scrolling, it will give you 120. And as soon as your scrolling stops, so, you know, I can scroll along and I'm at 120. And then as soon as I stop, it cranks it all the way down and uses as little graphics power as possible. And that's how it's saving battery power, is by only, it's adjusting the refresh rate as it goes. And that required some software, some custom software stuff. It's a very Apple kind of feature, because they had to build the hardware, they had to build the processor, they had to get the display, and they had to build the software to make it all work together.
And give it a fancy name.
And then, ProMotion. Yeah, it's weird, because it's like not like there's a ProMotion setting somewhere. It's just a marketing phrase for it. I guess they decided they wanted to wrap all of this stuff together, the pencil update stuff and the screen, and call it something. Kind of like Retina. Mm-hmm. Like, give it a name so that they can hang the description on it, instead of trying to say increased refresh rate, which is super nerdy.
Right.
It's like talking about bezels without defining it. Nobody knows what a bezel is. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows what a refresh rate is. What's my existing iPad's refresh rate? I don't know. This one's got more hertz. What's a hertz, right? So instead, ProMotion. Yeah. It's smooth like butter.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a charging question for you too, but first I want to take a second to thank our sponsor today, Tracker. If you have iPads laying all over your house, like Jason Snell, you want to make sure you keep them, you find them all when you need them, when you have to pile up 7 or 12 or 15 iPads. You want to know where they are. You don't want to lose them. Attach a tracker to the back of them. Tracker has a crowdsourced network, so that if you lost it while you were taking pictures of the Pope, you can find out where it is. Tracker is coin size, attaches to the your keychain, it can attach to your dog's collar, and it's a tracking device that is great for all the things that we lose all the time. And then now we have the Tracker Pixel that I want to tell you about. You'll never have to worry about losing things again with a Tracker Pixel. It's the lightest Bluetooth tracking device on the market. Place Tracker Pixel on whatever you lose the most, keys, wallets, even your cat. It's small enough to fit on your smallest items. When you misplace an item that has a Tracker Pixel attached, use your smartphone and a 90 decibel alert will help you find it in seconds. It even has a powerful LED light so that you can find your items even if you don't feel like turning the lights on. If you lose your phone, you just press the button on your Tracker Pixel and your phone rings even if it is on silent. And like I said, you can even locate items if they are miles and miles away, because every Tracker user is part of the largest crowd locate network in the world. Tracker also has a 30-day money-back guarantee. That means that you truly have nothing to lose. Get it? Nothing to lose. You can leave things wherever you leave things. That's the big thing. It's like, you know, whenever someone loses something, you always say, where did you leave it? And you never have to have that silly conversation again. Well, if I knew where I left it, then I'd be able to find it. With Tracker, just attach things to it. When you say, no one can ever say, where did you lose things? You say, because you've already found it with your Tracker Pixel. Here's what you do. If you want to try this, like I said, 30-day money-back guarantee, no reason not to try it. TheTracker.com, enter promo code IOS today. And not only by entering that promo code will you tell them that we have sent you there, you can also save 20% on any order. That's TheTracker, TheTracker.com, promo code IOS today for 20% off. And we thank Tracker for their support of IOS today. Okay, are you a charging, like, purist? Would you ever charge your iPad with your iPhone charger? Or do you?
Oh, man, I am the opposite of a charging purist. Any lightning port in a storm. Oh, hey, that was funnier than I intended.
good.
Seriously, I actually bought an Anker, one of those chargers that's got like 5 USB ports on it, and plugged in a bunch of lightning ports. And I realized that I'm not probably charging my iPad as fast as if I was using one with a little bit higher capacity. You can actually go out and buy the USB-C charger that Apple makes and put a USB-C to lightning cable on there and charge these new iPads or the old 12.9-inch iPad Pro at as a fast charger, basically. It charges them even faster. But, you know, bottom line, unless it only matters to me if I'm really low on power and I need to charge really fast, and especially an iPad, because I know that the iPad charger will do that faster. But that's a pretty rare occurrence. Usually, my iPad lasts till the end of the day, and then I plug it in overnight, and when I wake up in the morning, we're back at 100%, and it doesn't matter. Are you an iPad charging purist?
No, I'm not.
Who are these people? Who are the purists out there? The lightning, it's beautiful. You can charge anything. I mean, I have had like weak chargers where I plugged in my iPad and it says, I'm not even going to charge here.
Yeah.
Not charging is the funniest thing to see in your status bar. But for the most part, you know, if you close your iPad and leave it there, it's going to charge.
Yeah.
It might be slow, but, you know, I mean, if you use an iPhone charger, it will be slow, but it'll still do it.
I think it's Android people who've gotten used to the fast charging, the quick charging that, you know, I like the quick charging on my Apple Watch. That's, but I haven't gotten so spoiled that I need it to charge.
Well, I mean, and I understand fast. if you're taking your iPhone around and then you're somewhere and you want to do a really fast charge, I'm hoping that maybe there'll be faster charging in a future iPhone as well. But on these iPads have them, and I have heard from people who really love the fast charging on the iPad Pro, and they have they go out and buy, and it's a lot of extra money because you've got to buy the Apple adapter and the Apple cable. But if you do that, you can charge an iPad Pro really fast, and you know that's great. But yeah, for the uses that I think most iPad users have, they're not going to get through a whole charge in a day, and then overnight the whole thing will charge.
Right. And last we spoke, you had installed a charging unit into your wall, like in a plug.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
How's that working?
Again, that's me not being a purist. Yes, we replaced one of our outlets with a plug. First, we had those that are 2 plugs and 2 USB. And you know what ended up happening is that the 2 plugs were full of, again, USB adapters.
Yeah,
so it was 4. And so I actually found, I thought, this is ridiculous. And sure, they sell a 4 USB plug.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have that now in the wall where all of the phones were already attached. And now there's 4 cables coming out of there, generally going to phones. Occasionally it's going to a battery or an accessory or something like that. It works great. I mean, don't try this at home unless you are comfortable enough to turn off your power and swap out an outlet. But I was able to do that, and it was pretty great. My worry is that one of these days I'm going to have some USB-C devices, and I'm going to be sad that they aren't going to charge very fast with the USB-A plugs in the wall.
Mm-hmm.
But USB-A plugs are going to be with us for a very long time. Everything's going to adapt at the very least to a USB-A plug. They're everywhere. You think that those dock connectors are ubiquitous in hotels even now from the iPod and the early iPhones.
Oh, right.
Like USB-A is going to just forever. They're going to find like the traces of humanity the aliens will come down in like 5 million years and be like, who were the people who lived here? And they're going to find a USB cable. That's what's going to happen. So I'm okay with it.
Yeah. Yeah, they're going to be right next to the no smoking signs that are in the airplane still.
Yeah, that's exactly. You can't eradicate it because why? You just leave it there. It's not a big deal anymore. And everybody's going to, they're just converting in planes to putting USB-A plugs in instead of weird proprietary things. So are they going to change again? No, they're not. Yeah. So it's fine. Again, no purity in charging. As long as, do you have electrons for me and my electronic devices? Thank you. That's all I'm asking for.
Right. So you have the one that charges like 5 or 6 and you have the wall. So you have a lot. Do you have like a charging area for everyone in the family or do they charge in their rooms? How does that work?
So my daughter charges in her room because she's a teenager. Mm-hmm. So everything happens in the room. But what was happening is like my son was having his phone or an iPad, my wife's phone, my phone, all out on the counter in the kitchen. And that's where I put that that particular, you know, 4 USB plug. Mm-hmm. And then my anchor charger, which I basically got for travel, but I've got that at home by my nightstand, and because it's convenient to have one thing plugged in that's doing Apple Watch and my iPad and my Kindle, actually, when I need to charge it. I've just got those plugs all plugged in there. So, but the big thing is for travel. I finally relented. I've had so many friends tell me that for travel charging, getting one of those things is so much better than bringing 5 different bricks with you. And so that's, I gave up and I'm doing that. And so the next time I take a trip, I'll bring that with me.
Mm-hmm. I have one, I think it's from Belkin, that also is a portable battery.
See, that's a nice combination, right? Because then if you can't find a plug, you still got that. I mean, put more batteries in all the things, I say. That's I'm a big fan of that. We had a question yesterday on the Tech Guy about battery cases and for iPhones. And I said, well, you can get a battery case for your iPhone. And if you're somebody who's always needing an extended iPhone battery, it's really great. But I'm a real believer in standalone battery devices because then you can charge anything. It fits any model of anything because all you need is the charging cable. You can stick it in your pocket. You don't need to keep it on your phone and make your phone thick and heavy all the time. So I'm a big believer. I have a couple of those and I'll just slip it into a pocket if I'm going to a conference or something or into my bag. And then, yes, you may end up being the person who's got a battery in one pocket, a phone in another pocket, and a cable running between the pockets. You can live with it because your phone's still there. Right. So that's the important thing.
Yeah. You respect that. Like, you know, that person needed power. And
we're all cyborgs now at this point. Everybody is so totally a slave to their smartphone. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not like it's going to even seem weird. Somebody's going to be like, oh, you're charging. I get it. Mm-hmm. Right. That's like at airports. It's the same thing. We're all in this together. We all need to charge our stuff.
That's true. Yeah. I think I have 3 or 4 of the battery backups and my children always steal them and forget to charge them, which I think is the modern day equivalent of like not replacing the toilet paper.
Yeah. Or not putting the dishes in the dishwasher. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've seen that. I'll give my daughter a battery. And then if she even puts it out of her room, if I have to go in there and get it and it's drained, it's like, all right, I guess I need to charge this now.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I think we've covered the iPads. What about iOS 11, the beta? You have to be a developer to have it. Do you have any initial thoughts on that?
Yeah. The developer beta is definitely not for people who are regular people because it will kill your iPad. I know several people where it has killed their iPad and they've had to do a full restore, you know, wipe the device and restore it. There's a reason that only developers got it. There will be a public beta probably later this month. I think that's what Apple is hoping. And you can sign up for that and you can get it. It's still going to be buggy because it's a beta. It's going to be buggy. The bottom line is on these new iPads, they were made for iOS 11. They ship with iOS 10 and that's fine. Like the 10.5 inch, you can actually even see it. I was just looking at a conversation a couple of my friends were having where on iOS 10, the 10.5 inch iPad, how is it different from the 9.7 inch is there's a little more space everywhere. Like Apple in mail or messages, they just added some white space around so that like it's not literally not showing you anymore. But in iOS 11, it's showing you more. Like all the work about supporting the 10.5 inch display is in iOS 11. iOS 10 for that product is a stopgap. These are going to be so great with iOS 11. The multitasking features are pretty amazing. Take a little getting used to, and I think they'll probably tweak them a little bit this summer. The tweaking is also what a beta is for. But it's just they're really great. And I've been playing with the beta a little bit to just get used to it, but if it was my only iPad, I would definitely not install it yet because it's too soon. Even the first public beta, I would be wary. I would wait, because if you love your iPad and you want to use it, then you are risking having it be finicky and buggy for months until the final version ships. And if you're on an iPhone, I would say forget it, because most of the features that are going to be really available right now that transform how you use the device are iPad features. So iPhone users should definitely steer clear until a later public beta or until the fall.
Okay, good advice. And now, having used it just a little bit, would you say that you're any closer to replacing your MacBook with an iPad Pro?
Well, I was already pretty close. Like, I try to travel with my iPad Pro and not with my MacBook Air. My MacBook Air gets used a lot less than it used to. I don't use it in the house at all anymore. I just use it when I'm traveling and I absolutely need to have a Mac with me. And this gets us, iOS 11 gets us closer in a bunch of areas. There's the multitasking stuff, which is so much better. Like, I don't know if you found this using multitasking, but in iOS 10, the idea of multitasking is that you've got an app that you're using and then you've got the multitasking app, and it can be in slide over or it can be in split view, but there's just one. And if you switch apps, the multitasking app comes with you. Like, so if you've got calendar on the right side and you switched from Safari to Microsoft Word, calendar stays behind. And you think to yourself, well, I don't want calendar now. I want something else. There's nothing you can do. And in iOS 11, those app interactions go together. So if you set up one that's got Safari and calendar, and then you've got another one that has Word and Excel, you can do that and they stay together, and you can command tab on the keyboard and switch between them and the pairs of apps appear and go away. And then you can have slide over. On these iPad Pros, you can have a slide over app in addition to your split screen apps, in addition to your picture in picture apps. So you can actually run four apps at once, which is crazy, but it's also kind of awesome. And so, yeah, it's a huge step forward. As a podcaster, I also have to say the iOS 11 beta has support for something in Safari called WebRTC, which is super nerdy. But basically, it's an extension to the web that allows browsers like Chrome to do video and audio conferencing in the browser without any plugins, which is good because there are no plugins on iOS, right? Mm-hmm. The problem is, on iOS, there's only one browser. And it's Safari. Even if you use Chrome on iOS, it's Safari, because that's the rule, is you have to use WebKit, the thing that drives Safari. So in iOS 11, WebRTC is going to be built into Safari, which means, theoretically, I can use all of these apps that let you do podcasts through a web interface for the first time on iOS. And that'll be a game changer for me, because I'll be able to use those apps and record multi-person podcasts, download the files, edit them, produce the podcast all on my iPad for the first time. That'll be pretty awesome.
Yeah, I'm sure there are lots of use cases for other people as well. So yeah. That's interesting. Okay, so we have this question that I got from Neil that relates to this about replacing your MacBook with an iPad.
Yeah.
Neil wrote, I've ordered the 10.5-inch iPad Pro, and I would like to be able to transfer all of my data from the MacBook Air so that the iPad can replace it. What's the best way to move all of the data? Will it retain their file structure under iOS?
Yeah, it's tricky. But I feel like the answer here is, I mean, question is, what is the file structure and what kind of files are these? And are they files that are readable by iOS apps? Like, image files, if you want to put them in a photo library, the best thing to do is probably to sync them with iCloud Photo Library or Google Photos, mm-hmm. right? What you want to do is get them in a cloud photo library so that it's on the Mac, it's in the cloud, and it's on your iPad as well, right? For a lot of these files, if they're Word files, if they're PowerPoint files, if they're Office kind of files, or they're pages or numbers or whatever. I don't know. The nice thing about the way the iPad works with files now is you can put these in iCloud Drive. You can put these in Dropbox. There are lots of different places you
OneDrive.
Can put them. You can put them in OneDrive. You can put them in Box. And in iOS 10, you can use those apps to access them. And some of them you can use from, depending on what app you're using, you can actually open directly from the cloud service provider in those apps. And in iOS 11, not only will you be able to do that, but the new Files app will be there that'll let you browse around those services. But what, you know, at no point here does the iPad have the concept of like the iPad's hard drive where you copy your files over. Mm-hmm. Apple is really aggressive of wanting you to think of the cloud as the place you put your files. So, you know, my advice for him would be find, if you already have a cloud service that you're subscribed to, that's the answer here, is put your files in the cloud and then your iPad will be able to get to them and load them and you can use them that way.
That makes sense. So the file system, have you played around with the new file? I keep calling it a file system, but that's not what it is. It's the files app.
It's a files app. And the big difference from the Mac is that the Mac, you open up a Mac and you go to the Finder. It's like file management is what the Mac is. It's like a really not very interesting video game where you drag files around. That's sort of like the base feature of the Mac. And the iOS, the main screen is the app launcher, right? It's the home screen. Files is a separate app. So if you want to drag files around and make folders and things like that, you totally can with the Files app, which is basically like a replacement for the iCloud Drive app. It's the same idea, except it extends beyond iCloud Drive to be any different cloud file storage system. And you open it up and you can see files in Dropbox or Box or OneDrive or whoever supports it, as well as iCloud Drive. And with the new multitasking and drag and drop, that also means you can just literally just touch on a file, pick it up, and then drag it into another app and drop it. And it'll let you do that. So there are lots of different ways this can go, but it's going to be way more flexible than it used to be. If you're somebody who thinks in terms of files and finding a file, I think iOS isn't built that way. We think in terms of apps. But if you do have to go get a file, sometimes that's the case. You have to go get a file. They should let you go find that file or make a folder and drag a bunch of files into it so you know where those files are. And the Files app, yeah, it'll do that. It's a little bit weird, right? It's new for iOS, but I'm encouraged by it because it's not the default, right? It's just an option.
So I don't know if this is Neil's case, but I know for my case, I do have things in OneDrive and I have things in Google Drive and I have things in iCloud.
Me too.
Would you do this now or would you wait for the file app?
I think you could do this now, honestly. I think it'll get better with the Files app, but all of these services have iOS apps now, right? Like if you put your files in Google Drive on a Mac or a PC and then you go to your iPad, you open Google Drive, there they are, and you can get them out of there and you can say open in and have them open. Or in some apps, you can have an open dialogue and choose Google Drive and go open the file. Like you can do that now. It's maybe not as unified and not as nice as it'll be in iOS 11, but you could do it. The only hesitation I've got is if he's got apps that do not exist on iOS, that he thinks the file is important, but he can't open it on iOS, that's going to be a problem. And there are special media types, right? So like if you've got music, the best thing you can do is probably not to drag your music collection to a cloud library, although you could, I suppose, but you might want to think about syncing that with one of these services that lets you upload your music library into the cloud and does matching. And Apple has that. So does Amazon. So does Google. Video the same way. And photos is the obvious one where you probably don't want those. Dropbox would love you to just drag your entire photo library into Dropbox. You could do that. Mm-hmm. It will work. It might not be as nice as using iCloud Photo Library or Google Photos.
Well, I think we did a good job answering Neil's question.
Yeah, I mean, don't be afraid of it. Unless you've got a special file format that you can't touch, at which point you're probably not thinking of moving to iOS. It's safe. I feel like it's really safe now. Like I tell people, if you've got like Microsoft Office files, put them in your cloud drive, put them in your OneDrive, presumably you've got, and open them on iOS. It's that simple.
All right. Well, I think that, do you have any favorite apps for the iPad Pro before we move on to some news?
A lot of good stuff out there. I know I plugged it on the show before, but Ferrite Recording Studio, which is my iPad podcast editing app of choice, is really great, you know, with the fast speed of that processor and the big screen of the 12.9, it's really great. Apple showed on stage this app called Affinity Photo, which is, it's funny, you know, Adobe decided to break Photoshop up into little bits on the iPad, and Affinity Photo instead is basically Photoshop. It is. There are others. Pixelmator is a good example of another great photo editor. But Affinity Photo is pretty amazing. I've got it up here on my iPad, and it's got like, do you want layers? It's got all the layers. You know, it's got layers. It's got effects. I'm just turning off a bunch of layers here. It's got a complex interface. It's got palettes that slide out and go away. You can make adjustments to various layers or the entire document. You've got all of the tools that you would expect. I can call out a paintbrush tool and totally ruin the art, and then step back with the undo tool. This is essentially, as a longtime Photoshop user, I look at Affinity Photo and I think, oh my God, it's Photoshop. Like, this is what Photoshop should look like on iOS. Unfortunately, Adobe conceived of Photoshop on iOS sort of before the iPad Pro existed and thought it would be better to like break it up into something that's kind of a little more like Photoshop Elements, where it's like, this is the fix app where you can fix your photos. And that's it's an interesting approach, but I, as somebody who's been using Photoshop a long time, I kind of would prefer the approach that Affinity Photos takes, where I've got all of those palettes and all of those commands at my disposal to have complete control over this image. And this is one of those examples where you can really see this thing's got the power of a laptop, because Affinity Photo is trying very hard to use all the resources of this device to do a multi-layer, multi-effect photo editor, and it totally works.
And it's not cheap. It's $14.99, which I guess is cheap compared to Photoshop.
Cheaper than Photoshop, right? I mean, that's we need to keep the App Store perspective, right?
Yes.
Which is, for a pro app, like Ferrite is a good example, where that's an audio editor. That's all in with all the in-app purchases. It's $20. I think it's just as good as Logic, and Logic is a, what, $200, $300 Mac app? So, you know, it's expensive for an app, but really cheap considering what you're getting is basically Photoshop. Mm-hmm. It's kind of mind-boggling. It'll open Photoshop files with the layers intact. It's pretty incredible. So that's one that I that's what makes me feel like, yes, I am really using a professional level device that's got a lot of power behind it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think one of the problems with the price is that there's no, you know, with software we're used to having like a trial version and being able to try it before you buy it, but there's nothing like that in the App Store.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like the way Apple wants us to approach that is they want developers to sell apps for free with an in-app subscription, basically. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that way, your subscription trial is your trial. Mm-hmm. And then you either agree or you cancel. And more apps are moving to that. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting that Affinity Photo decided they're going to do the a la carte, just, you know, buy the app. Maybe they've got some in-app purchases. I don't know. But it's that's the other way to go, is to say, yeah, sure, it's free. But if you want to use these features over time, you need to pay.
Right. Every month.
And that's the demo version on iOS.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. Well, we've got some iOS news, but first I want to thank the sponsor of this episode, Rocket Mortgage. I just recently got a mortgage and it can be a real hassle. You're running all over town. You really just want to think about your new house or think about all the money you're getting from refinancing the house you already own. But instead you're worried, you're on the phone with your mortgage broker trying to go here, go there. Rocket Mortgage takes the sting out of getting a mortgage. They throw technology at the problem. It's simple and it lets you understand the process. You're not confused and you can think about your new house. You can fully understand all the details and be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. It's a lot. A house is the most expensive thing you'll buy, and you want to make sure that you're getting the right loan. Rocket Mortgage really helps the mortgage process keep up with the times. It's client focused. It uses the tech that we all know and love. It's also convenient. They have trusted partners, allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. And it's powerful. So if you're looking to buy your first home or if you're looking to buy your 10th home, Rocket Mortgage can perform thousands of calculations in seconds. You can do all those calculations on your couch, in your pajamas, on your iPad, on your iPhone. You can do it on your time, wherever you are. And based on your income, your assets, and your credit, Rocket Mortgage can analyze all of the home loan options for which you qualify and then find the right one for you. So you're not stressed out in a mortgage broker's office. You're sitting on your couch with your family, looking with your partner, looking at what the options are. You can slide all the sliders around and decide what's best for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply. Understand fully. Mortgage confidently. You can get started right now. Go to rocketmortgage.com/iOS today. That's rocketmortgage.com/iOS today. Let them know that we sent you. They are an equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. NMLS consumeraccess.org number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support of iOS today. All right, let's talk about TV. I know
you're. Let's do it.
Yeah, you are a TV expert.
I would not say that. I do. Does watching TV make you an expert in that case? Yes, I am. Yeah,
then we're all experts. But the podcast that you do with Tim Goodman is about TV. But usually He's the expert, and you're the host.
Yeah, he's the chief TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter. He knows his stuff. I'm just a guy on the internet who talks about television on podcasts.
Who happens to be talking about Apple, has talked about Apple for many, many, many years. So Apple this week poached two executives from Sony Pictures. And I guess this means they're serious about content.
I feel like the jig is up now that is. We've been talking for a while. I'm like, well, Apple says they're going to be getting into video, or there are rumors that Apple's getting into video and may do their own video service. But really, it's just Planet of the Apps and Carpool Karaoke, and they're going to be on Apple Music, and they're testing the waters. We don't really know if they're actually intending to take on Netflix and Amazon and HBO and the like. And then they go out and they hire the presidents of Sony Pictures Television, who are well-regarded and have been involved in the development of many, many well-regarded TV series over the years. This is the, for people who are confused, this is the well-run part of Sony's entertainment business, not the not the movie business, the TV business. They've done a really great job. But the problem with Sony is that they don't own a real, unless you count Crackle, they don't own a path of distribution. So they're relying on some of their competitors in terms of because all the networks own studios as well as networks, they're relying on them to buy their shows instead of their company's own shows, right? So if you're NBC and you're deciding between a show from Universal or a show from Sony, it's like, well, Universal is part of NBC. Maybe we'll go there. Makes it easier to cancel a show. So Sony's had a tough road, but they still managed to generate some pretty great stuff under these guys' tenure. Well, they were negotiating with Sony for their contracts, and they were up this summer. And guess what? They got a better offer from Apple, who hired them, and they're going to report to Eddie Q. But I get the sense that really they are handing – Apple is handing these guys the responsibility for building an Apple video service, because there's no other reason you would hire these two incredibly well-regarded TV executives than if you were very serious, like dead serious – about being a competitor to HBO or Netflix.
So when you say video service, you mean a Netflix?
I think it has to be a subscription service. We were talking about it on the TV Talk Machine, Tim and I, and one of the things that came up was, I kind of talked myself right out of it when I said it, was, well, you could put it into Apple Music and make it Apple Music and video. And then I thought, you know, Apple's whole goal the last few years has been to talk about how their services revenue is growing. The last thing you would do is say, hey, pay for our service and you can get unlimited music and video. No, they want to upsell you. Maybe they would bundle those two things together. But I feel like ideally, if they've got enough content on their catalog, they'd want to have a separate subscription for video on top of music and sell you both if you want both. Now, Amazon with Prime has done something totally different where they've kind of rolled it in. But if you look closely, like if you want unlimited music, there's another thing you have to buy. Prime doesn't cover it. Prime has a little tiny sliver of music. And then everything else, you have to buy the Amazon Music product. So I don't know. I mean, I think that's what Apple wants to do. Apple wants you to pay your monthly fee for music and then pay another fee for video. And that means, yeah, they want it to be like Netflix or Hulu or Amazon Prime Video or HBO or Showtime with their over-the-top services. Mm-hmm. They want you to pay them. They're going to want, probably next year or the year after, for you to pay a monthly fee for access to a whole video catalog, including a bunch of exclusives that Apple commissions.
So do you? So it will be more than just originals?
I think it has to be, only because Tim and I talked about this. If you imagine Netflix without the catalog, mm-hmm. They would have been like, hey, pay us $10 a month for House of Cards and nothing else, mm-hmm. right? That was how it started with Netflix. So they had to build that back catalog. And if you look at all of these services, even now Netflix has a lot of catalog stuff. Amazon has a lot of catalog stuff. Most of it's not even exclusive. They both have it. Mm-hmm. Some of it's exclusive. HBO has a catalog. They've got their old TV shows, but they've also got a bunch of movies that come through. They come in, they come out. So I feel like you've got to have something there beyond the originals just to give people some value. So I would imagine they would make deals for non-exclusive stuff, maybe even make some deals for exclusive stuff. Apple's always had a good relationship with Disney. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of content. These guys have had a big track record with Sony. I don't know if there's a way to make some connections there. There are some options. But yeah, ultimately, if you're Apple, you could go out with some new shows and tie it into Apple Music and say, we're putting these here. But at some point, you gotta make the cutover and say, we want you to pay us $10 a month or whatever the price is for this amazing Apple video service. And they've got to make it worth your while. And for when they get started, they're only going to have one, two, three original series. I think they're going to try to ramp up. and they've got the money to do it. They've got billions of dollars to spend, and Amazon and Netflix spend billions of dollars, so why not Apple? They've got the money, but it's still going to take time. I mean, developing TV takes a long time. That's why I don't think this is even something that we would see until late 2018. Yeah.
Well, because the executives, Jamie Ehrlich and Zach Van Amberg, they're known for distributing their content, like you said, because they don't have one place. So do you think there's any way that they might do that? They might just, this is Apple content, like Sony Pictures.
Yeah.
Apple is more like a Sony Pictures, and we'll sell to Netflix, we'll sell to Hulu.
It's a good question. My gut feeling is that these guys are going to be doing what... like Ted Sarandos does at Netflix, which is saying Apple has got money to spend and we're going to work with development executives to buy shows so that they're going to behave more like network executives mm-hmm. than like studio executives. I'm skeptical of the idea, which they were studio executives. I'm skeptical of the idea that they're going to come in and build a studio structure at Apple, mm-hmm. like to make shows, when the best thing is probably to pay studios to make shows for Apple's channel. Apple's not going into the business of making TV shows, I think. I think Apple's going into the business of having a service that lets you watch TV shows. Mm-hmm. And so we'll see, but I think it's more likely that they're going to be like Ted Sarandos at Netflix, who is the programmer of Netflix and is working with studios to make shows just for them.
Mm-hmm. And how do you feel about this model? Like, I love the Netflix model. Like, in terms of critically acclaimed, like TV that's really creative, that has, you know, I'm not a fan of like the Planet of the Apps type shows. Like,
yeah,
I like
agree.
Stories, I like drama, mm-hmm. and I feel like Netflix and Amazon Studios, you're able to create that. They're not, you know, like constantly canceling stuff. You don't have numbers. Oh, that this didn't get enough viewers.
Well, they have numbers, right?
Well, they don't share them.
But they don't share
us,
them, and they're
right?
not the traditional numbers.
Yes.
Like when Netflix canceled a couple of shows a few weeks ago, mm-hmm. like Netflix knows more than any other broadcaster probably does about their user behavior, because it all happens in their app,
mm-hmm.
but they don't share any of it,
right.
and they're not traditional ratings. They probably have crazy metrics that we can't begin to fathom that make them determine whether a show is worth it or not. But yeah, it's a good place for Apple to be. I think Apple is more likely to want to be like HBO, where they sell themselves as being kind of a premium, high quality content provider. But yeah, I think they're going to make a splash. I think they're going to try to make really good scripted stuff. If you look at these two executives, a lot of the scripted that they worked on was very high quality. Breaking Bad mm-hmm. is a good example. A lot
the
of
Crown.
Stuff to AMC. Yeah, the Shield mm-hmm. is another example. So it's like they have a history of making high quality stuff at Sony Pictures Television, and I think that fits with Apple's brand. Is, you know, in the end, I think Apple will probably be more like an HBO than like a Netflix, in the sense that they're going to want not to have everything under the sun for all audiences. Netflix does Fuller House, right, for
mm-hmm.
example. I don't know if they want to go that far with this, but I think that if you look at HBO, that's a great example of a service that's charging you $10, $12, $15 a month to get this, you know, get these originals and a curated selection of other stuff that's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll be interesting. And how do you think it will work with the Apple TV? Like, do you think it'll be harder to get Netflix or HBO on the Apple TV?
It's got to be front and center, right? I think they'll still have it. Just like you can get Netflix on a Fire TV today, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Amazon stuff is front and center. I think mm-hmm. it'll be like that with something like this, that they've already taken these tentative steps with the TV app on iOS and on Apple TV, and that will probably, the TV app will probably be the hub for Apple's TV stuff, and then other stuff will also be in there too.
Mm-hmm.
But I would imagine that that'll be the defining factor. I think the real question is, how much do they want to use this service to bring in services revenue versus how much do they want to use this service to sell hardware? The old Apple, it would all be about selling Apple TVs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can only get this by paying for Apple services and buying an Apple TV. But today's Apple isn't quite that sure about that. Like,
mm-hmm.
there's Apple Music for Android.
Mm-hmm.
There is Apple Music is on a Sonos hardware. Like, Apple services have crept outside of just Apple's control. You know, iTunes has always been available on Windows, for example,
mm-hmm.
too. So I do wonder, like, would Apple, I don't know if Apple would go so far as to put Apple's video service on Amazon Fire TVs. They might want to, on the TV set, they might want to lock you into Apple TV. But never say never, because I think in the end, what they really want to do is increase that services revenue. And that's
mm-hmm.
getting as many people to pay them a few dollars a month for their video service as possible.
Right. You can only sell so many iPhones and iPads, right?
Yeah.
There is a limit.
And then the other people, you still want to reach them. You don't want to cut yourself off from the rest of the world
mm-hmm.
after you sold every Apple TV you mm-hmm. can, I think.
And it makes sense. I mean, I have the family membership of Apple Music. It's $15 a month. There's no way I spent $15 a month on CDs. So I don't, whatever they charge, I don't spend that much on iTunes movies buying them or renting them. So it's probably they're going to get more money from me.
Yeah, I think so. And and if the shows are good, that's the thing I like about this is that these guys have a good reputation as making good shows, that they have good taste, that they've worked on really good projects. And though not as a network programmer, so we'll see about that. But I like that these guys have good reputations. It was unclear who at Apple really knew the TV industry, and these guys know the TV industry. Mm-hmm. They're a power team. They have good relationships with creators. And if I had to make any predictions here, other than the fact that I don't think we're going to see the fruit of this in terms of actual new scripted shows until next fall of 18, but I do think you'll see announcements, right, where somebody, some maker of a TV show you have loved over the last 5 years, who's considered a genius at making television, is going to say, I'm making my new show for Apple. And that's going to be a big deal. And maybe they license a product, some sort of book or other property, franchise, that they're going to make a new live-action scripted TV show for Apple. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be the start of it, is people starting to talk about, wow, Apple's really gearing up here for whenever they drop it in the summer or fall of next year.
Right. Yeah, it would have to be like a Westworld or a House of Cards. No, Fuller House.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I think they will. I think, imagine if they go to, I was going to say, like Damon Lindelof or J.J. Abrams, or maybe they go to David Simon, who's had a good relationship with HBO, but you never know. Right. Or maybe it is the people who are doing Breaking Bad. Or I mean, there's so many different people they could go to, and that they probably have decent relationships with. Maybe it's the producers of The Shield, and they start to sign them, say, like, make your next project for us. Mm-hmm. We've got all the money. We'll give you, you know, we'll give you a commitment. You don't even have to make a pilot episode. We'll just give you money, make a season of a show. And they will line some of those people up. And then, yeah, maybe they'll make a deal and say, the example I gave the other day when I was on, I can't even remember where I was because I've been on so many podcasts, was it's probably not Star Wars. I think it was to Tim Goodman. It was like, you know, maybe not Star Wars, but imagine them, Apple having such a good deal relationship with Disney, saying the first live action Star Wars TV series is going to be big budget and spectacular and on the same quality level as Westworld and Game of Thrones, and it's going to be available in the fall of 2018 only on Apple's video service, whatever they call it. Mm-hmm. It's a big deal. They are going to make some announcements like that. Maybe not at that scale, but they've got billions of dollars to spend and they want to grow this service, so they will make a name for themselves.
Well, I can't wait to see. Another thing that I'm not as excited about, but made some news today, IKEA.
We're never as excited about IKEA,
no,
are we?
I know. Well, I love Apple, and I have very, like, I just bought a new house, and I said, no IKEA. I'm a grown-up now. Like, we got to get rid of all the IKEA that we've had, you know, from our very first house. But it would have been really nice to be able to use my iPhone and the AR kit that is coming to be able to see where everything is. And apparently IKEA is going to be one of the first, according to Tim Cook.
Yeah, they built the models for all of their stuff, and you'll be able to, like, AR them in your house. Like, choose a model of IKEA furniture and set it in your house and walk around and look at what it would look like in your house, which is, you know, it's kind of a first step. But at the same time, it's a cool idea for a practical. I think they wanted to show practical use of augmented reality. And this potentially could be that, right? It's hard to visualize what that new IKEA, whatever unpronounceable Swedish name for something is, if it's in your house.
What the meatballs will look like on your cooking on your kitchen stove.
Imagine. That would be a great little bonus feature to like put a bowl of Swedish meatballs somewhere in your house.
So yeah, this is, I mean, there, even the Planet of the Apps, there was the Pear app, which I had used before, and he was one of the guys defending his app, and it was fine. Like, it was wonky. It was hard to see what the furniture was going to look like. This is apparently, IKEA claims it's going to be within a millimeter of distance or something like that. A lot of promises. And 500 to 600 of their products.
But the idea here with ARKit is that Apple is doing the hard work and the math in the background. That's the thing that I don't think has gotten as much attention as it should. The ARKit is a tool for developers. They all have it now. It'll be in iOS 11 this fall. And it means that the developers, instead of having to be like a few developers who are building AR stuff for themselves that's kind of wonky, instead they get this, from the people I've talked to, extremely good, extremely hard to do stuff and they just get it mm-hmm. and they can build their apps around it. And right. that's pretty amazing. Like if you remember how janky Pokemon Go was mm-hmm. when it came out last year, the demo on stage at WWDC was basically like, we just had the Pokemon Go developers use ARKit instead and this is what it looks like. And you could tell immediately if you ever used it, like, oh my God, this is so much better. Like to not have to waste your time building your own AR implementation when Apple's got a really good one for mm-hmm. you. There are going to be so many AR apps coming out this fall with iOS 11, and some of them will probably be great.
Yeah.
And then there will be the rest of them.
Right. I mean, that was the thing that they said at the keynote, that this is going to be the largest AR platform as soon as it launches because everybody's yeah. got an iPhone.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so I teased this at the beginning of the show, anatomy of an app store scam. This is about a week too old, I think June 6th. There, you wrote about this.
What I did. What it's pretty here? Amazing. So it's just an example more than anything else of what bad behavior can be. This is a guy named Johnny Lin wrote about this, and it's about scam iOS apps. And the article's called How to Make $80,000 Per Month on the Apple App Store. And he basically looked in the top grossing apps. He says, follow the money. And he found this app called Mobile Protection space : Clean and Security VPN.
All the words.
Super. Yeah, well, it's SEO optimized. So if you do a search in the App Store, they have the search engine optimization here. You search for VPN and this comes up, and maybe they even spend a little money on search keywords and you get this thing. It's nonsensical. Why would you buy a third party untrusted VPN anyway? It claims to search for viruses and duplicate contacts and things that are not things on iOS. So they're using language that you're used to seeing mostly on PC scamware. That's basically where you would see this stuff. It's got these weird, cryptic, anonymous reviews. That's a bad sign. And then when you download it, it starts to ask you, we want you to scan your contacts. We want to analyze your device, which, what is that? How does that work? You can't actually do that from the App Store. And then lots of misspellings, lots of weird stuff, pop-up ads. And then the kicker is the start free trial screen, which says antivirus, instantly use full of smart antivirus, cancel anytime you want, free trial in a giant button. And if you tap free trial, guess what happens? You get a payment request that says start your $99.99 7-day subscription. And if you don't read this and you think it's a free trial, you put in your password or do your Touch ID, and guess what? You just got charged $100 and will continue to get charged $100 every week by this scam app.
How does this get in the App Store?
That's a really good question. Like that was my initial thought, was this should never get in the App Store. And you got to wonder if maybe it's been engineered in a way that it looks different if you're in Cupertino or something like that, or somebody just bleary-eyed person just approved this app thinking it was going to be okay. But there's no way that anybody could look at this app and say that it's functional. It claims to do things that are not possible on iOS. So how in the world could you approve this? Now, I'm sure that if you're somebody who got charged $100 for a piece of junk that doesn't do anything, you probably complained and got a refund from Apple, but some people won't, right? I think this is preying on people who are lazy enough to not understand and not look at their credit card. Mm-hmm. And it was in the top grossing apps, right? It was in the top 10 top grossing apps. So obviously people were paying for it. And it's pretty bad. I don't know the end of the story and whether they got pulled down. I assume they did. But the thing is, you pull it down and then what happens? It gets pulled up somewhere else mm-hmm. under another account and they do it again. So, you know, it's just one of those examples that as a user, you got to pay attention, mm-hmm. And you need to be aware that even though Apple is curating the App Store, scammy stuff is in the App Store, and like anything that's telling you they're going to antivirus scan your phone, like mm-hmm. don't. And I know this audience is very tech savvy, so it's also tell your friends and family like they don't have a virus on their iPhone
right.
or their iPad, and they don't need to be paying for antivirus software that they found in the App Store. But Apple needs to take a harder line. It's so ironic. We talk about this when I'm on here. I know you talk about it, these App Store rejections that don't make any sense. Mm-hmm. It's like, this is why you need a tough set of rules in the App Store, is to say, no, if you claim to do this, you're not going to make it into the App Store. You cannot claim to clean up an iPhone because that's not a thing.
Right. Yeah, I don't know how it would get by. And I also like to tell people, like, to just check in on your subscriptions every once in a while. This
totally,
is the way that
they auto-renew. And they try to warn you, but you can easily miss the warnings that Apple sends you in email.
Yeah, and I don't know. There might be an easier way, but I always do it through Apple Music for some reason. So you just go view your Apple ID, and then you just can see all of your subscriptions right here. So if you're watching this, here they come. So it's, these are, I'm not sure that I knew that I was doing any of these. And it'll tell you what expired too, what you canceled, and it'll tell you.
Right, it'll tell you your whole history of things that you subscribed to
right,
in the past.
Right, exactly, which is great to just go through and make sure your kids didn't subscribe to it. I think I was going to test this for the screensavers. But yeah, and then you can just cancel that way. Just go regularly check. Because I know I subscribed to the free trial for YouTube TV and I forgot.
Yeah. You can also go to the App Store and you tap on your Apple ID and say view Apple ID, and then that will bring up a thing that includes the subscriptions list.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know
it's
why.
The other way to get to it.
Do it through Apple Music.
It's probably faster to go through Apple Music
maybe,
if you're an Apple Music subscriber.
Yeah. Pokemon Go got an update. Neither of us are Pokemon Goers.
Yeah, but this is exciting because they're addressing the biggest problem with Pokemon Go, which was they didn't have, like, the gyms. You would go to a gym and the people who were grinding it and playing it all the time would take over the gym, and then you couldn't play. So they got a new game system or a new gym system and cooperative play. So these are the features that it should have had last summer, but they obviously rushed it out the door and it became a huge success. So who are we to argue? But more cooperation between players, that's a huge thing. Like, how do I play this with my friends instead of us all just sort of playing against the terrain? Mm-hmm. And then a new gym system to make it that you can, you know, interesting to play in the gym instead of just walking by and saying, oh, it's level 20, I guess I should just give up now and stop using Pokemon Go, which is what happened to us.
Yeah, well, apparently the Pokemon will lose motivation over time, like people.
Well, that's good. So it's a Tamagotchi now, too.
Yeah, I guess so.
No, it's good. I mean, it's a fun game. If they do the AR kit stuff, it'll even look better than it does now, which would be a little bit less janky, would be nice. But I think it's a great idea. I think these outdoor video games, these AR-enhanced video games, I think they're going to be huge. I think Pokemon Go is not a fad. I mean, it's a fad, but it's also, I think, a suggestion of what is to come, because I think if you could make things truly much more cooperative and you have people out there sort of scouring the landscape and cooperating with other people, people they know, people they don't know, it could be something really great. Pokemon Go was like on the verge, but everybody got to the edges of what the game was capable of doing so fast.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of died. So maybe they can revive it by making it more fun to play. I don't know.
It's only been a year. I mean, it hasn't even been a year.
It hasn't been a year.
July of last year. Yeah.
And summer is the perfect time, right? With a long day, summer, Northern Hemisphere summer is a perfect time to launch it. That's, people were out with their kids in the late evenings last summer here all around the U.S. Mm-hmm. And I think they're hoping that if they can get this out there, it can happen again. They say 65 million people are still playing Pokemon Go. So more power to them.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, we have our app caps wherein I make Jason wear a giant hat. I didn't pick it out, but first I want to take a minute to thank our sponsor, 23andMe. I was at a party over the weekend on Saturday, and I don't remember why we were talking about this, but everybody had used 23andMe, or their parent or their relative had used it, and it was just this interesting conversation. One of my friends is adopted, so she got to learn so much more than she would ever know otherwise about her heritage. And it was just really interesting. 23andMe is a genetic analysis company named after your 23 pairs of chromosomes, your DNA. There are over 75 online genetic reports in categories like ancestry, wellness, traits, and even health. You can learn more about who you are. Ancestry reports include ancestry composition, haplogroups, Neanderthal ancestry, and your DNA family. You can also use the DNA Relative Finder tool to find and connect with new relatives. Learn how your DNA influences your traits and how it relates to your caffeine consumption, your muscle type, your genetic weight, and more with 23andMe Wellness and Traits Reports. 23andMe's carrier status reports meets FDA requirements, so no worries there. You can find out if you are a carrier for certain inherited conditions like cystic fibrosis and hereditary hearing loss. In a word, you can understand what makes you you. Get over 75 genetic reports and start exploring your DNA today at 23andme.com/twit. That's the number 23 for your DNA, for your 23 pairs of chromosomes. 23andme.com/twit. That's 23andme.com/twit. And we thank 23andMe for their support.
I got a lot of Neanderthal DNA in me.
You did?
I do. Yeah. I've done 23andMe. Yeah, you absolutely. Have. And yeah. I've got a few third and fourth cousins on there. It's pretty,
well,
pretty
that, fun. That's everyone always says the Neanderthal, but does everyone have Neanderthal?
No, it's people from certain backgrounds. I think it's mostly people from Western Europe who've got history in Western Europe. That's where the Neanderthals were. So that was where the interbreeding happened. So if you're from there, and I am entirely from Western Europe, basically. Okay, so that's my background. Yeah, absolutely. I've got that. And it turns out I'm a fast caffeine metabolizer. So,
yeah. Does that mean you can drink more caffeine or?
Yeah. Cause it doesn't affect me as much as it does some other people.
Does it say stuff about salt? I've always wondered that. Like, cause some people are not like affected by sodium.
There's a bunch of stuff. I don't remember that one, but you'd be surprised at the stuff that's got even blush response is one that made me laugh. That people's, there's a genetic component in people's flushing response.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. Is your hat down there?
I don't know.
Oh yeah. That's a hat.
Is this a hat?
Yeah.
Oh dear. Oh, this is like a Pope hat.
Yeah.
I approve of a Pope hat.
They can't really fit in the screen, but you know, if this, all you need is your iPad. Here, I'll take pictures of the Pope with my iPad.
Yeah, sure. That's right. Bless you. I'm now sacrilegious. I apologize to all Catholics or anyone else who wears pointy hats.
No apologies.
Oh, yeah, there we go.
You apologize to everyone who wears pointy hats.
Boy, the people who just listen to this podcast have no idea what's going on.
No, yeah, we're wearing hats.
We're very, very stylish.
And we're wearing hats because this is the app cap. They're really caps. Although I don't know if either of these could really be considered caps.
I don't think so.
And you have to keep your head still while you're wearing yours. It falls right off.
It's going to fall right down. I could just hide in this hat if I wanted to.
So we do this because we talk about our favorite app, the App Cap Award. And your favorite app this week.
Pipifier. So one of my favorite iPad features is Picture-in-Picture, which lets you play video while you're doing other stuff on your iPad. It's pretty awesome. Problem is, it doesn't work with all apps. Some apps and websites don't support Picture-in-Picture. Pipifier was on the Mac originally, and it's a Safari extension. And they've implemented it on iOS as a share extension, which is pretty amazing. So YouTube is the best example. YouTube doesn't want you to Picture-in-Picture your videos. This is a podcast that I produce where we play D&D.
Awesome.
All right. But YouTube, okay, where's the Picture-in-Picture here? Where's the picture? I can full screen it.
Mm-hmm.
Great. But it's not even really full screen. But at least I could do that. So Pipifier is a share extension, and this is how it works. I go to the share menu, and I scroll over to Pipifier, and I tap it, and watch what happens. Boom! It's in Picture-in-Picture now, and I can switch away and look at that. I now have a YouTube window in Picture-in-Picture with all the privileges that you get with a Picture-in-Picture window, and it's running out of the browser, and that's all it takes. It's just this little share extension that does the right thing on HTML. So if you've got HTML video playing in your browser and it doesn't offer you Picture-in-Picture and you get angry, the answer is Pipifier, because it doesn't work everywhere, but it works in a lot of places. And for me, just YouTube alone, it's a big deal, because not all the YouTube videos I watch are 30 seconds long. Some of them are things like video game playthroughs and D&D playthroughs or live tech events, right? One of the things that I hate is if I'm watching a live tech event on YouTube and I want to take notes and I can't get it in Picture-in-Picture, but with Pipifier I can.
Yeah, so you could Pipify us right now if you wanted to on YouTube.
You could. Mm-hmm. We may be Pipified right now and don't even know it.
I hope so. I feel a little Pipified.
It feels appropriate.
Mm-hmm. How much does it cost?
It's free.
Free,
the low price of free.
Whoa, that's great.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right, so my app cap of the week is the Bullet Journal Companion, which I've talked about before, but it has a new feature. Do you know about bullet journaling?
A little bit. Okay. I've heard about it.
Do you journal at all?
I do not.
My AirPods just fell down. I have been bullet journaling since January. And I managed to fill the official bullet journal here all up with my thoughts. I didn't think I would finish it this month. This didn't even take a year. So it is a grid journal. So grid dots there. And the secret to bullet journaling is the index. So you start with the index and so if I have ideas, like I have gift ideas here, some things to ponder, I recorded my food that I was eating for a few days, different things, and then it will match the page. So let's see, my moving checklist, because I moved back in March, I could go to page 46 next time I move and look. Page 46, here's my moving checklist, and I can see it. So I like journaling by hand. I feel like it makes me think about what I'm doing.
We said before, it's getting your thoughts out on pencil and paper or pen and ink it changes how your brain kind of files that stuff.
Yeah, and I just feel like, I have a really long to-do list. And sometimes there's stuff on there that I don't really need to do. I just put it on there. And this make writing it and crossing it out and like migrating it to the next to-do list really makes me think about, do I really need to do that? Like, is it really important for me to redesign my website again? Isn't it good enough just the way it is? Maybe it is. Yeah. So I like that. And the bullet journal app is a companion. It's an extension.
Oh, I see. So it doesn't replace your bullet journal.
No, it does not replace my bullet journal. So I will, let's see. There it is. And I've shown this before. It has a reminder. It has little quotes in there about reflection. It has articles about bullet journaling, some show and tell, so you can see other people's journals and how they do it. A lot of people have a lot nicer handwriting than I do. And it also has this new feature called the library, which after I'm done with a bullet journal, I can archive it. So here's my bullet journal that started in January 2017 to June 2017. Here it is. I took a picture of the cover of it. That's that. And then I took a picture of the index. So I have all of the things that I've written in there. And then I also have tags. So, you know, when I've been bullet journaling for the next decade, which is my goal, there's a lot of information. And I can just go to the tags and I can think, where did I have notes about the Women's March there? And then it'll find that. Or cell phone plans or, you know, whatever it is. So I've added all of the tags there. And then it'll find which journals I've put those in. So I really like that. And here's my new journal that I also wanted to show off. This is from Baron Fig. It's the Baron Fig Confidant. Do you do the show on Relay FM about pens and journals?
I do not. No. My co-host, Mike Hurley from Upgrade, does the Pen Addict.
Mike would probably appreciate the Baron Fig.
Oh, yeah.
This has grid pages. You can also get it with blank pages. You can't really see the grid. But it also has perforated pages in the back. So if you wanted to take something out, are you going to send this to Mike?
I'm going to send that to Mike. It's beautiful. Yes.
Next time I talk about pens and notebooks, I'll have Mike on. It's $18, which might seem like a lot, but I'm carrying it around everywhere I go. And I made my own index, my own future log. I'm kind of a freak about the bullet journaling, but that's who I am. And that's my app cap.
Very nice.
I like your multitasking. That's good.
Fancy journal. I got it.
Look, we're pipified.
Oh, look. We've been pipified. You can slide it around on the screen if you need to. It's great. For the low price of free.
Yeah. So the bullets, Scooter or Sybil, are not about bullets for guns. Just bullets like on a page, like dots.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's nice. I do wonder if they will finally make a really nice bullet journal app for the iPad Pro with the Apple Pencil that'll like be a suitable substitute for pen and ink.
I was taking a look at one. There's one called InFlow. Have you ever heard of InFlow? Mm-hmm. Let's see. It doesn't have bullets, but I don't know if you need the bullets. But what InFlow does, I can't remember if I actually downloaded it.
By the way, I just heard from Mike Hurley, who I sent him the photo, and before I could even explain that it was a Baron Fig journal, he said, oh, that's a Baron Fig journal.
So, yes.
Yeah.
He probably knows it comes in charcoal or gray. Different sizes.
Look, this rabbit hole goes far deeper than you could ever expect.
It's hard because when I'm talking to you or Leo, like, you're just sort of, glassy eyes, like, okay, yeah. You and your paper journal.
No, but I know people who are so excited about it, which is great. I can't believe that we're having this serious conversation while wearing these funny hats.
Oh, that is.
It's amazing.
We can never have a serious app with the funny hats. So
there may be someday a good bullet journal app, but I don't want to take away from the tactile experience of having a nice journal with some heft, some nice paper, and that maybe a nice pen. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, I think I like writing. I try to use the Apple Pencil, and I don't think there's something about the ink coming out of the pen and going onto the paper.
Well, they need to reduce the lag enough, and they need to have that ink flow kind of effect for you to really feel it. Maybe one day computers will be able to do that.
If they could get like the ink get all over my fingers and then have me wipe my face by accident and then walk around for the whole day with like ink on my face like I did in eighth grade that time and no one said anything, then I will be happy.
Okay. Well, I'm sure they'll work on that.
Well, Jason, thank you so much for joining me. Would you feel better taking the hat off now?
I'm living with this hat now.
Okay, good forever.
For all time.
Okay. And thank you for co-hosting so many absolutely. Of Leo's shows. And Relay FM, SixColors.com, The Incomparable.
You got it.
I love your Clockwise podcast.
Thanks.
I've been on a couple times.
I'm not doing that one anymore.
What?
I retired from Clockwise. I'm doing a new one called Download instead. So Clockwise is still going with Dan Morin and Micah Sargent, but I am now doing Download instead.
Oh, okay.
So you have to come on Download.
I'll come on Download.
Or Clockwise. You can go with those guys. They're
how
nice.
Long have you been not doing Clockwise?
Just a couple weeks.
Okay. Whew. Was it something I said?
No, I just didn't want to do like more. I wanted to move to a new podcast, not add yet another podcast to my podcast life because I already do too many podcasts.
Okay. So. What's the theme of the Download?
Download is a little bit longer. It's about an hour, and I'm trying to make it more general tech. So if you think about like Twit versus MacBreak Weekly, Clockwise, because Dan and I covered Apple for so long, was not entirely Apple-focused, but there were Apple focuses on it. I'm trying to be really aggressive with Download at making it outside of my comfort zone, getting some good guests on who are experts in, you know, Google and Android and Windows and Apple, but like spread it around a little bit and have it be a little more general. And that's been a fun challenge for me. And I think it's good. And a little less stressful than the 30-second ticking clock of Clockwise.
Yeah. So it's more of an interview, like a Fresh Air type?
No, I would say if you think about comparing Twit to MacBreak Weekly, it's a little bit more like that. It's a panel show. I've got two or three people on. Talking about tech news.
Yeah. Okay. So it's more like Twit or more like MacBreak
Weekly? It's more like Twit. Clockwise is maybe a little more like MacBreak. We are deep in the podcast weeds now. Anyway,
okay. I think more people like not it. Apple.
Yeah, yeah. It's a little less on Apple and more on general tech.
Yes.
That's the idea.
Yeah. Well, thank you for listening all the way to the end, to the weeds. Thank you, our guests, for coming all the way from Kentucky.
And they're in the hat zone now with us. Yeah. We will make them wear the hats.
No. You can come see us too. Tickets at twit.tv. Leo will be back next week. twit.tv/iOS. And Jason can be found at sixcolors.com. and underneath that hat.
If you can find me.
Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you next week.